Atamaria Matthew, thanks very much for joining us on Pakiwaha.
Oh, morning. Always good to be with you, Claudia Hawiti, and I'm glad you got an upgrade to the morning stint.
I got an upgrade. It could be Back to the Future, because I used to be here and then I went to a better time slot in Drive and now I've come back. So now I now come back to the morning. Matthew Tukaki, the only problem with coming to the morning is that one must watch its P's and Q's and its language. You see? And that's not really me now, is it, Matthew Tukaki? I would rather be much more frank and upfront in the evening slot.
Well, as somebody who spent 9 through to midnight on Australian Talkback Radio, I can tell you I know exactly what you mean. Few people will know, but I know. But just a quick correction. No, on the weekend I was proud to be re-elected unanimously as the chair of the National Māori Authority, Ngāinguru. So I was overwhelmingly pleased with that. So another 3 years ahead of me, supporting our whānau in the kaupapa. But can I also just say, I heard that you're going to be interviewing Pāro on your show. Can I say what an incredibly valuable and rich voice she gives to issues right across this country when it comes to our tamariki, and not just here in this country, but Indigenous peoples in particular. And given the sad news that emerged overnight about literally the hundreds of children in Canada that have been found in an unmarked grave, can I just say I share the sentiment that some have sent me over the last 24 hours, Claudette. We have unmarked graves of whānau in Kihikihi as part of the Tokunui Hospital, lying in unmarked graves. We need to sort that out. We have a potential issue with Lake Ellis, and that was brought to my attention by Darren Cassidy, another strong advocate. I'm going to be writing today to the chair of the Royal Commission into State Abuse and Care and ask that wherever possible, we need to have a look at those two sites, if not other sites of concern. No whānau, no tamariki, no mokopuna, none of our elders should be lying in unmarked graves. No, nowhere in this country should that be the case. So I thought I'd just get that in there as well.
Thank you. Thank you so very much for that. And so we do know then, we know anecdotally, do we know in legal terms, or no, I don't think that that's quite correct, but do we know for sure in terms of archaeological evidence that we have whānau, unmarked graves at Tokunui Ellis Hospital? Do we know that for sure? Do we know where they're located?
So Lake Ellis, I can't speak to that one definitively, so that requires more inquiry. But in terms of Tokunui, I can tell you that there used to be a single parcel of land at the Tokunui Hospital, and that was then carved out. And next door is an ag research station. In that ag research station, there is an urupa, there is a cemetery. It's unmarked. It is hard to navigate or to identify, and I can tell you this because I've been there. I've been to that cemetery at the Ag Research Centre or station next to Tokunui Hospital, and I can tell you there are literally hundreds of people buried on that site, former patients, former workers. And one of the prospects I raised only a few months ago was even when it comes to World War II veterans who were put into Tokunui Hospital because of what we would now call PTSD, but then was a sectionable offence under the Mental Health Act. We also know that potentially some former people who served this country in defence of this nation and others in World War II are potentially also buried there. This is something I've been working on now for quite a few months, working with Kawhia Murihi, who's the chair of the Maniapoto District Māori Council. Can I tell you, if that's happened at Tokunui, and it is, I can tell you that we're probably facing the same situation around the country. Lake Ellis is probably very similar to what happened at Tokunui, although I don't know what the numbers are, but it stands to reason that we have whānau, like I say, whether it be Māori or non-Māori, buried in cemeteries and unmarked graves. And quite frankly, we should have more respect and regard for our dead than some cases we're doing at the moment. I mean, the problem that I took with Tokunui, Claudette, as an ag research station, well, we've got cows on hoof running across Urupas. You know, that's not who we are. But it also speaks to the battle sites of Māori across the land wars. you know, there are potentially still sites of significance that are either currently undisturbed, disturbed, or even undiscovered that we need to do more work on. So that's a big piece of mahi.
Well, a big piece of mahi. It requires a Royal Commission of Inquiry, surely. I mean, some of these people, you know, these unmarked graves, some of their whānau don't even know that they're there, didn't even know that they were, that they had died probably. We don't know the circumstances around some of these people's deaths. They could have, but, you know, there, any amount of things could have happened as to why those people were buried there. Nothing short of a Royal Commission, surely.
Well, there was already an inquiry into Tokonui Hospital some years ago, and this is how we know of people being buried at that urapa. My question is, well, what comes next? And I think the Royal Commission is already there in terms of those other sites where possibly whānau and kia are. But you know, it's a difficult one because I find it really hard and really tough. To be standing on foot in places like Tokonui, where I know there are whānau there, but there's no identification of who they are. Apparently, according to the Ministry of Health, they do have some records, but actually not all records. And this is the other problem with the Royal Commission to Abuse and Care. There, you know, the expectation is that we should be able to fashion up those records and provide it to the Commission. But in actual fact, from what I understand, the Commission is having great difficulty obtaining records and archives
and that is
from
because
across a range of government
that
departments.
That is because the organisation or the agency wants to hide certain information. I mean, that's what we would think from looking from the outside. If the records aren't available, or if they've suddenly gone missing, or if they've been redacted, then obviously there is something huge to hide. That's all we can assume.
And that's right. And if they can't provide those records, they must provide an honest answer as to why the records cannot be provided. But this is it. I mean, as somebody who spent quite a bit of time in Canada, for my other mahi with Drake and employment and all the rest of it, I know those stories. And when I read the story about what had happened with those couple of hundred tamariki, you know, your heart just cannot but break for them. But also their whānau. I mean, how many whānau in our First Nations Indigenous brothers and sisters over in Canada have remained in deep grief and mamai because they just didn't know or weren't aware of what happened to their own children, their own grandchildren. So, you know, I'd hate to think in a small country like this, it's to that extent. But also don't forget, this is also
what
emerged in Ireland.
Does it matter, though, you know, to that extent, though, Matthew Tukaki, does it matter whether it's 215, which was the number identified in Canada, in Big Turtle Island, or whether it was two here in Aotearoa? The fact is that it took
it
place.
Matter.
Number... disregard
right.
The number. The other thing too, though, Matthew, can I just be completely honest with you and say that I'm feeling very uncomfortable with talking to you, and I mean this quite respectfully, about children in state care, victims of state care, survivors of state care, and we've got no, apart from Paulda and several others, there are no state survivors on your panel, and we are talking about them. We're talking about them and about other people and about those people overseas. We are not talking with them, and they are not talking to us. We're talking about them. Very uncomfortable,
well,
Matthew.
That's not true. That is not true. Nata Glavish is a former ward of the state. She is also quite open and honest about her lived experience, and that plays out through our deliberations. Bernie O'Donnell, senior, who is standing up a lived experience network on our behalf, the number of whānau and families we're engaging with every single day, plus more, plus more, plus more, hundreds of people around the country. So it's not completely true or accurate.
Well, Dame Nada Glavich aside, no other are on your immediate steering panel. There are those that are coming in and they're talking to you and they're, you know, trying to get their voices
again,
so they're not on your panel.
Well, they are being heard, and I absolutely refute any accusation that we're not listening to whānau and families every single day, because we are. But more importantly, other board members also have a lived experience of the system, both as carers and also whose own whānau have been through the system as well. So, you know, we've got to put lived experience in the context. There are a lot of people with different lived experiences of the system, both as those who are children within the system, tamariki, mokopuna, but also whānau members, mothers and fathers, grandparents. We are literally dealing with all of those people, and all of those people have an equal voice, rather than one voice maybe being more important than the other. So we are listening to everybody, and quite honestly, I hear some of that talk out there. I'm not the one responsible for appointing board members, of course. That's the government. But I can assure you and rest assure you time and time again, that we are listening and have been listening. But anyway, aren't we here to talk about what's going on in Tauranga?
Oh, yeah, look, you know, you and I, we've got a really great friendship, so, you know, it's all very good. Can I just say this, though? Why would you want to be listening to them? Why can they not just be the panel where we hear them? You know, why is it a one-way thing? Why can't they speak outwards rather than them speaking inwards to a panel?
Hang on, but they are, and this is what frustrates me to some degree. The Royal Commission into Abuse and Care is dealing with the very historical perspectives and stories of whānau with a lived experience of the system, and they've stood up lived experience networks, have got their advisory panel, members of the Royal Commission also have lived experience, and so on and so forth. You've got to set aside what is happening in the present with what has happened historically. We're dealing literally with families who are in the system right now. In the system now.
Yes, every single whānau, Matthew Tukaki, every single Māori whānau has an immediate member or a whānau whānaui member who is a part of the system.
Or know someone. Yeah. Mm. And so we're dealing with, this is the complexity of what's going on here. And I remember under the national government, they said that they didn't need a Royal Commission. And this is something that emerged as a reminder in the last week or so. Well, the reality is the Royal Commission was set up to try and get some historical perspective on what was going on, but also find a pathway of truth for people to be able to tell their stories, and also, I'm hoping, in the redress scheme, be compensated in whatever form that takes, including possibly an apology or whatever it might be. That's not for me to serve. It's Judge Coral Shaw. What we're doing here with our work is have a look at the children, the whānau within the system right now. So any number of people have come to us about what's going on, everything from the FGCs that they feel that they're not being heard on, right through to pathways back for their children now. So there's a dealing with what's happened and there's dealing with what is happening, and we're in the happening mode. And the other thing too that we're trying to do is work on a form of prevention, because unless we break the backbone of supply into the state care system, it doesn't matter who sits on any inquiry for any reason or any purpose, we're never going to be there. We're always going to be chasing our tails. And I'll give you an example.
Can I just move on? I just want to ask one more question on this kaupapa before we move on to the next. Are there or are there not tamariki Māori who are being whāngaied out of the country by international fostering organisations here in Aotearoa?
Yeah, I'd love to know where that's coming from, because all of the data and the information that I'm receiving on two fronts. Number one, we are not a sending country for adoptions. We are not a sending country for adoptions.
But whāngai, you know, or foster care fostering where they are taken overseas.
I don't know this for certain, so this is still part of our inquiry, right? So, number one, if children are leaving, and the country, I would argue, is probably the one where they might be going, would be Australia. If through whānau, and these children are not at our attention in terms of Oranga Tamariki or whoever, if they are going, they're going because of their family. They're going because family have made a decision. We're not necessarily involved in that decision. The other thing, though, that there is a forum through which if children are feared to have been taken in a dispute between family members, and that is the Hague Convention, then a case can be taken towards or using the Hague Convention to have those children returned. And this is it. And I'm glad you raised this, actually, because this is one of the biggest bugbears I have with what we talk about in terms of whānau and fostering and kids in general. We have created a situation between family members, parents and mums and dads and whānau, where children are literally weaponized in a dispute between adults. And so it could very well be the case that a child ends up over in Brisbane, for example, because mum's taken the child there, but dad's over here.
That's in and amongst family members, because there seems to be some chatter out there that children that are uplifted by OT are being fostered out to non-whānau members internationally, and so it doesn't seem to be happening.
We have not come across that in our inquiry at all, and we've been through a lot of stuff, including the whether or not we're sending countries for international adoptions and fostering and whānau. But here's the thing: there is this mythology and rumour and hearsay about what is going on with children in this country. Normally, can I be frank? Where it started by a disenfranchised adult. Mm. My message to everybody should be, stop weaponising your children in dispute between adults, I hate to say this, but grow up. And that is why we're taking a hard, cold look at the family court system and family law and the Adoptions Act 1955 from the 1st of July. But I see it every single day, the use of children in a dispute between adults. Mm. And it does my head in.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Matthew Tukaki, thank you so very much for joining us. Pity we didn't get to talk about the wahine in Tauranga that got yelled down for speaking her six words of te reo. But I guess we're going to see more and more of this as Māori becomes more widely used, particularly by our non-Māori whānau, our tangata tiriti, and, you know, as Māori are calling the racists out, we're going to get more and more of a backlash, I would say, and all I can say is bring it on.
Well, can I just say thank you very much. Let's bring it on, because, you know, all this,